Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Come on, you knew I was working today and I made that meal, and you could have thought to yourself, you know, you could have said, I think I'm going to get Brooke some flowers.
You said on our very first date that you don't like flowers, that they're a waste of money.
Every girl likes flowers, Gary.
You say that you don't like flowers. I'm supposed to take that to mean that you do like flowers?
No, this is not about, you're not getting it. You're not getting this, Gary. Okay, it's not about the lemons, it's not about the flowers, it's not about the dishes.
All I ask, Brooke, is that you show a little bit of appreciation, that I just get 20 minutes to relax when I come home instead of being attacked with questions. All you do is nag me. The bathroom's a mess. Your belt doesn't match. Hey, Gary, you should probably go work out. Nothing I ever do is ever good enough. I just want to be left the hell alone.
That little clip was from the movie The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston. It's an example of what my guest today calls the crazy cycle. Without love from him, she reacts without respect. Without respect from her, he reacts without love. And on it goes. It demonstrates how ineffective we are as couples at communicating and hearing one another's hearts. Dr. Emerson Eggerich is here today to talk about this crazy cycle and show us how to stop the madness and initiate change. Dr. Eggerich is the president of Love and Respect Ministries, and his book, Love and Respect, will be the focus of our time together today. Dr. Eggerich, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you, Rita.
With all the knowledge and skills we have today about marriage, why are we still struggling with relationships?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think many people are scratching their heads over that very question. I think the University of Washington got at the foundational issues. They studied 2,000 couples for 20 years in their love laboratory, and they said, we now know the two key ingredients for successful marriages, love and respect. And the reason that's important is that, you know, obviously we have money problems, we have sex concerns, we have in-law issues, we have employment burdens. I mean, the list goes on. And when a husband and wife get into a conflict, let's say for money, he might say, what'd you do with that $500? And her spirit deflates and she walks off. And then he says, you know, if we didn't have money problems, we'd have a great marriage. But the truth was, it was his unloving negative attitude that deflated her. Or, you know, if they are at the Love and Respect conferences, I sometimes say, and the man says, well, do you want to be sexually intimate tonight at the hotel? And she said, that all you ever think about, you animal, is sex, sex, sex. Well, his spirit deflates, and then she says, you know, if we didn't have these sex issues, we'd have a great relationship. But what the University of Washington found, and we found in our own research, is that there is a gender difference here even. And also the Bible teaches this. In Ephesians 5:33, the summary statement to the greatest treatise in the New Testament on marriage, the summary from the Lord is this: a husband must love his wife, and a wife must respect her husband. And it's intriguing to me that it's gender different here. And so we've asked 7,000 people this question just to see if teasing this out would manifest any statistical significant differences. And sure enough, we've asked this question: when you're in a conflict with your spouse or significant other, do you feel unloved at that moment or disrespected? 83% of the men, 83% of the men said they feel disrespected during that conflict. And 72% of the women, 72% of the women say they feel unloved. So we all need love and respect equally. That's an important point that I make. We all need it equally. But the felt need during conflict is as different as pink is from blue. And I think one of the reasons that we have then, in answer to your question, I think the difficulty in intimacy when this culture wants it more than ever, is I personally think we've removed the idea of respecting the spirit of a man from the marital radar screen. You know, when women say to me, you know, they hear this thing of respecting a man, especially during conflict, coming across respectfully, and it's not respecting evil behavior, it's coming across respectfully. But women will say, you know, I don't feel any respect for him. It'd be hypocritical for me to show it, and I'm not going to be a hypocrite. He's not superior to me. I'm not inferior to him. I'm not going to be treated like a doormat. We're equal in the eyes of God. He hasn't earned the respect, and everybody knows you've got to earn it. He doesn't deserve it. I'm not going to feed his narcissism, and that's what this is really all about, and I'm definitely not going to give him license to do what he wants to do, and I'm not going to return to patriarchy and fear his male dominance, and for sure I'm not going to lose a sense of myself or my identity and subject myself to emotional abuse. But other than these things, Dr. Emerson, I am really open to hearing what you have to say about this.
Yeah, that's great.
And I say to women who have children, and sons in particular, do you have baby boys? And they'll raise their hands. And I said, what I just went through in that mantra is what is going to be the attitude of your sweet daughter-in-law toward your precious baby boy. And she's not going to have a mean bone in her body. She's going to be love itself. But she has been given a license to communicate all those things to a male. And men do not respond to that well because we serve and die for honor. And so when a person shows us contempt, we shut down. And the University of Washington found that 85% of those who stonewall are men. So there's this huge gender difference. And to your question, then, I believe in part it's because we have focused solely on love and we haven't focused on what Ephesians 5:33 is teaching. And when that happens, there's going to be a real confusion in the camp, a lot of misunderstanding, and people are going to feel devalued and be clueless as to why.
You show how this connection between love and respect plays out in what you call the crazy cycle. Great, great name. How does that work? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Exactly. If it's true that our deepest needs are for love and respect, and she, at the end of the day, really wants to be loved, even though she wants respect, if you treat a woman disrespectfully week after week, she'll say, you don't even love me. How can you say you love me and treat me disrespectfully? And if women wanted respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, why is there not one card from a husband to a wife that says, baby, I really respect you? It's not that she doesn't want respect, but when she's embraced, she wants love. And her view says, if we just love one another, that's all that matters, and we'll be okay. And if you were more loving, we'd have a better relationship. So her spirit's in the right place. That's the way God has made her. That's why the command, though, to her comes along the line of respect. And in fact, 1 Peter 3:1-2 says that you can win a disobedient husband through respectful behavior. And Hosea 3:1, the prophet was told, go love a woman who's an adulteress, and that was Gomer, his wife. You win a woman through love. You win a man through respect. If we don't understand that again, then we're going to get on that crazy cycle that you reference. And what is that? When a woman feels unloved, she tends to react in a way that feels disrespectful. Women don't know what respect looks like, but they definitely tell me they know what disrespect is. It's the default mode that they go into when they feel unloved. And when a man feels disrespected, he tends to react in a way that feels unloving to his wife. He doesn't know all the positive loving things, but he certainly knows how to be harsh and angry and go quiet and silent and walk away. That's very natural for him when he's feeling contempt or provoked. Thus was born what I call the crazy cycle. Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love. Without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts, and this baby starts to spin. And I point out to men this very important truth. Your wife is not trying to be disrespectful. She's not trying to offend you. That's not her goal. She is saying, I have a need that only you can meet. And I'm reacting this way because I need reassurance. And I'm moving toward you to connect, to resolve, to reconcile. But what happens, her eyes are dark, face is sour, hand on the hip, scolding finger, rolling the eyes, the sigh, the head going back. And when estrogen kicks in, the word choice of contempt is incredible. And so all of these are gestures of disrespect to a male, and he doesn't hear the deeper cry of her heart. And men who are listening, I get that. But what you have to do is decode. She's a good-willed woman who is saying, I have a need that only you can meet. On the other side, when a man feels disrespected, he ends up reacting in a way that feels unloving to his wife. Truth is, he'd die for her if a murderer came into the house and attempted to kill her. And Jesus said, no greater love is a man than this, that he lay down his life for his friend. According to Jesus, that's a pretty loving man. But men are not sensitive or as sentimental as wives, and so there is this discrepancy. And particularly when he feels provoked, he's going to withdraw, because when his heartbeats get to 99 beats per minute, he's in warrior mode. So he withdraws as the honorable thing to do. However, in a woman's world, that's unloving. But the truth is, he's not trying to be unloving. He is saying, I have a need that only you can meet. And I'm reacting this way because I expect you to decode that. I'm losing energy. Leave me alone. You're picking a fight. And she's not doing any of that, but that's how he feels. But the bottom line is this. He's not trying to be unloving. He's feeling disrespected. And I always ask women, did you say or do something prior to this that felt hugely disrespectful to him, even though he doesn't deserve it? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But he should know that I didn't mean it. So the crazy cycle is born, and we're helping couples recognize it and get off of it and realize they didn't make a mistake in marrying this person.
So they've got to begin by noticing it. For example, on a practical level, a woman needs to notice her body language, her tone of voice, like you said, pointing the finger, yelling at him, because what happens for him is he gets flooded by all this emotion. And so his way to protect himself is to withdraw emotionally. Is that right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think you know that. You've studied that. And that flooding that goes on in a male, and it's not because he's trying to be unloving. He's feeling overwhelmed by these gestures of contempt. And I say to women, go in front of a floor-length mirror and reenact how you came across, and say again in front of that floor-length mirror. Do it all in front of that mirror and watch yourself, how you just talked to him in a heated moment of fellowship, and watch yourself, and then ask yourself this question. Is there any person in his life who talks to him this way? And if the answer to that question is no, then he's not hearing your heart. He thinks, and you just have to understand this, he thinks you're using this topic as another opportunity to send him a message that you disapprove of who he is as a human being. You do not accept him for who he is. You don't like who he is. You don't respect who he is. And we can say all day long that he ought not to feel that way. I mean, if he gives you a diet book January 5th and you go ballistic, we can say all day long you ought not to feel that way. He was truly trying to be helpful. He's a health nut. It was all about health, not about the fact that he wants you to look like a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. We can argue all day long that you ought not to feel that way. But the truth is, every woman is vulnerable to the diet book. Women boo and hiss whenever you bring up the diet book in a conference. It is something that's vulnerable within women because they hear a message. They hear a message, I don't accept you, I don't approve of you, and I don't love who you are unless you look like a gorgeous model. Now, that's not what he's trying to say, but what we need to do is challenge men to pull back, because women have vulnerabilities where men don't. So, too, men have vulnerabilities where women do not. However, men do not break down and cry. They get angry and go off by themselves, and that's labeled even more unloving. Many men are dead in the water when they react the way God designed them to react, to do the honorable thing when they feel disrespected, and to go off and to calm down. But when they disengage like that, that's horribly painful to a woman. And we're defending the woman's feelings today, but we're not getting in tune with what our sons are feeling. I'm not justifying the man staying away. What we coach him to do is, if his heartbeats get to 99 beats per minute and he's in warrior mode, he needs to calm down. So he needs to say, I need to take a 15-minute break. Don't follow me. Don't chase after me. And then I say to him, as a man of integrity, you come back and stay in place. But then we say to the woman, you stay on point. Don't spiderweb. Don't take this opportunity to hit him with everything that you are feeling. Stay on point. Talk about it. And if the two people can learn to do that dance, they'll be okay.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I teach my clients. You're so right on. I think what happens is, each person forms a belief system about who the other person is. So when he walks out, she's believing, oh, you don't even care enough about our relationship to stay in this game. You're walking out on me. And he's believing, well, you don't value me as a person. You hold me in contempt. You think that I'm worthless or no good or don't cut it. So he exits to, like you said, calm himself down, take a few breaths. And I think what they need to both get is that he needs to stay engaged, but he may need that 15-minute timeout, like you said, and then come back. So that's exactly what needs to happen. They need to notice this dance, and somebody needs to start doing something different if things are going to change up.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And understanding that both are motivated rightly. She's motivated to connect and to increase the love between them. He's moving away because he feels like this is getting carried away. This is getting out of control. Men are lethal. Men are warriors. Men can kill. And so men pull back because that's honorable to do. He's trying to de-escalate what he perceives to be an escalation of a very serious conflict, so or could be. So he's doing the honorable thing, and he must not be dismissed as unloving. He must be seen as honorable, even though it feels unloving. And he must not dismiss her as disrespectful when she's trying to do the loving thing. Both have to recognize he's trying to do the respectful thing, she's trying to do the loving thing. Now the question is, how do they do this dance together? As we just pointed out, there are many times he needs to take a 15-minute break and come back. At the same time, not every issue is worthy of pursuit, that there are some things that just need to be dropped. You know, I had a woman say to me recently, as a young girl, her dad said to her, "Honey, is this going to matter in an hour from now? Is this going to matter in a week from now? Is this going to matter in a month from now? Is this going to matter in a year from now?" And we have to decide, what are the mountains and what are the molehills, and what is it that we need to really chase after him about, or say to him, "Let's talk in 15 minutes, versus, you know what, I'm just insecure, I'm feeling a need to be reassured, but you know what, I'm being bothered about something that's really no big issue here, and I can drop it. He's a good-willed man, an honorable man, and this was my misinterpretation, and I can mother him again to tell him to be more sensitive, or maybe I need to acknowledge that I'm a little bit overly sensitive. Christ calls me to die for himself. I can certainly maybe take this particular situation and drop it and move on." And as people mature, they need to figure out how to do this. And both of us need to give the other the benefit of the doubt, though, and try to respond to the other's vulnerability. But if one is always wanting it their way, then they need to back up and say, "You know what, I may be pushing this too much." And the Lord is saying to me, "You know what, you can give that burden over to me. Cast all your cares upon me. I care for you. In fact, I'm using this situation so that you would deepen your relationship with me. I'm fully capable of taking your burden here. This is really a faith crisis for you, not a marriage crisis."
Well, if a man or woman doesn't feel safe in the marital relationship, how do they begin to make those first steps toward connection? Because this is really an issue of safety. He withdraws to protect himself from pain, and she pursues because she's trying to get her needs met.
Well, I don't put it in that phraseology. When we use the word safe, I always think in terms of physical abuse, because my dad attempted to strangle my mother to death.
Oh my God!
And so I always hear safety. My mother left for several years because of safety issues, my dad's rage and the fear I think she had that he would bring harm. So the word safe always conjures that up in me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if we use it in the way that you're doing, tenderly saying, you know, he's trying to protect himself, you know, and this, mm-hmm. it's not like she's this mean-spirited woman, you know, that's coming after him, and he's got to do what he's got to do to stay safe from this, you know, woman who rides a broom.
Yeah, but
you know,
emotionally not, safe.
Yeah, exactly, emotional. So that, yeah, we've got to come to a point where we realize, hey, we are adults here, and this is a good-willed person, and this is an emphasis I make. Am I married to a good-willed person or Hitler's distant cousin?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got to come to that point, and I happen to believe we made a good selection of the person that we married. We know they're good-willed. We know that they're not evil-willed. Now, they may do this dance in a way that's upsetting to us, because as a man, we'd prefer to drop it. I get that. As a woman, we prefer to talk about it. And when the other doesn't engage us in the area that we want them, like, well, just drop it, okay? It's no big deal. Well, but she's a woman who has emotional needs. And so if I'm saying to myself, well, I'm not safe as she's moving toward me and chasing after me, come on, you'd die for this woman. You're fully capable of engaging her. This is nothing more than social ostracism at its worst. And one of the things that University of Washington found is that women are going to express themselves negatively. And I encourage men to take the negative hit. You're willing to die for her. Certainly you can live with her, you know. And there is this negativity that's going to be there. Her eyes are going to darken, as I say, the face turns sour. But all of those things are her way of saying, I have a need that only you can meet. This is a compliment, not a complaint. And once we understand that she needs something from us, she's not chasing after us to put us down. Yes, we feel that way, but she's insecure and needs something. This is our strength that she's looking for. We are the Christ figure. She's the church figure. She's coming to us because she has a burden, and she wants us to hear and understand. I call it the three R's. She wants to maybe release her emotions. She wants to talk about them, to realize those emotions. She wants to share those emotions to build rapport, to give them the report to build rapport that Deborah Tannen talks about, so that her motivation is to increase the feelings of love between us. She wants that harmony. This is not a mother coming at us to somehow scold us. So the challenge there for the man is, quit feeling unsafe. This is not about unsafeness. This is not about you needing to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This is not your enemy. This is your ally.
Right, and she's trying to get you to hear her heart. So you've got
That's exactly right.
You've got to cut beneath that anger and scolding finger and everything and try to hear her heart.
And on the flip side, she needs to be informed, and this is one of the campaigns we're on. You cannot communicate your need in a disrespectful way. You won't motivate a husband to move toward you to connect and to do the loving thing on the heels of your contempt and disrespect. You cannot communicate your need for love in a disrespectful way any more than he can communicate his need for respect in a hostile, harsh, angry, unloving way. We cannot use unholy means to achieve worthy ends. So when you're upset as a woman, you need to come at him and say, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm not trying to dishonor you. I have a need that only you can meet, but I'm so upset. I need to talk about this. He'll hear all of that. I tell women to speak the mother tongue of a man. And what I just shared will soften the male spirit. Every great male leader knows how to approach other men when there is conflict. You cannot show contempt toward a male. You cannot appear contemptuous. Now, men are more compartmentalized, so it's easier for them to control that emotion. And women also feel comfortable in the ocean of emotion. They feel comfortable with the emotional drama, with their sisters, with their mother. They all intuitively get it. They understand what's going on. They're upset. They're hurting. But men don't process it that way. That look, that tone, all of those things are completely misunderstood. So what she has to do is diffuse that misunderstanding. I will tell women this, if you misrepresent yourself, you're going to be misinterpreted. So what you've got to do is say something like, I'm not trying to dishonor you. I'm not trying to come disrespectfully toward you. Please help me do this right. I don't know how to do this in a way that's going to sound respectful to you, but I need something from you right now. Can we talk? When can we talk?
Hmm.
I believe every goodwill man will respond to that.
Absolutely. Your wife, Sarah, said something I loved in an article you wrote titled, My Response is My Responsibility. She said, Emerson doesn't cause me to be who I am. He reveals the way I am. And that's such a powerful truth. I tell my clients that their marriage will move forward or stay stuck depending on how responsive they are to God's leading in their own personal lives. Because couples come to counseling wanting to change the other person when God is wanting to show them how he wants to work in their own lives and their own hearts. Is that how you see it?
Well, yeah, and I hate that statement, my response is my responsibility. I mean, none of us like that when we first hear it. But, you know, and truth is, I want to say to Sarah, you know, honey, look, your response is your responsibility. And by the way, my response is your responsibility. So, honey, if you would just lock into those ideas. Honey, your response is your responsibility, and my response is your responsibility. We'll be happy. This will be a great marriage. Now, all of us laugh at that because we think that's ridiculous, but that's how we live. You know, we really do. You know, I would be happy if you would show love and respect toward me. And if you feel unloved and disrespected, get over it. And if we could just live this way, we'd have a great relationship. But we all know how immature that is. And one of the things that we're trying to help couples discover is this, that if you subscribe to the idea that my response is my responsibility, and my spouse doesn't cause me to be the way I am, my spouse reveals the way I am, that's ultimately liberating, because otherwise I hold my spouse responsible for my own happiness. And what I'm doing is I'm giving them total control. And I'm also saying, I don't believe that I have any influence, that I don't have any real persuasion here. I can't really motivate. I'm really a hopeless, helpless victim. And so the reason that we're going to counseling is that I need you to listen to this counselor, because that counselor is going to tell you to change. And you need to change because you're my God. And my healing is contingent upon you changing. And if you, my God, don't change, I'm going to blaspheme you, because my future happiness and holiness and healing is contingent upon your performance. And if you don't perform right, then I can't be happy. So now, isn't this pretty simple to figure out? So just change. But my concern then is that we're giving that person all the power, but we also believe they do have that power, and we don't have any power. And the Lord is not in all saying that in the Word. Hosea was able to win his adulterous wife, a respectful woman. 1 Peter 3:1-2 is able to win her disrespectful husband. The disobedient husband. Through her respect, Peter said, you can win this disobedient man. There is so much power here, and we've got to remind ourselves, we really can influence this situation. We may lose the battle today, but we're going to win the war. But if we keep demanding that this other person change and be to me what I need, then we're giving them all the power. And the Lord is saying, that is just not liberating to you. You're going to become enslaved. You're going to become a victim here in a way that I never intended. That person is not in control, and you can influence them tremendously if you just believe what the Lord is saying in His Word. Over the marathon of the marriage, a loving man will soften the spirit of his wife. He doesn't have to demand that she become respectful. His loving ways will soften her heart. And when he says, you know what, the way you said that felt disrespectful to me, she'll hear him on the heels of his loving demeanor. A man who consistently tries to do the loving thing, and even says, forgive me for being unloving. He is empowered. He's empowered, and that will motivate her to be more respectful. That's why we say the energizing cycle, his love motivates her respect. If he goes to a counselor so that the counselor will make that woman show respect, he's giving that woman all the power, and there's no guarantee that's going to happen, and that's backwards. That's not going to happen. And same thing, if a wife is saying, you know, well, I want this counselor to make my husband more loving, why do it that way? The risk there is not worth it. It's not going to happen.
It's
not going to last, exactly. So we say her respect motivates his love. That when you come across respectfully, yeah, you feel like you're being demeaning or a doormat or whatever. I get that in initial stages. But if you do that, you're entering the honor code. And a good-willed man will soften. He's going to start thinking, she's a better man than I am. And that he will begin to hear her heart, and then she can say, I don't want to dishonor you. I need something from you. I need this love. He'll hear her, and he'll make adjustments because you're influencing, you're persuading, you're motivating, you're energizing, you're stimulating. These are the things that God says you have the power to do.
Emerson, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. It was awesome. I love everything you're doing. We're behind you here, and blessings to everything you continue to put your hands to.
Thank you. God bless you.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.